now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Geraldine Sutton Stith, the author of Alien Legacy. Geraldine is from the family that was involved in the classic and what some might consider nightmarish Kelly Hopkinsville, Kentucky experience in 1955 when a whole family and family friends were literally besieged by aliens. I mean, I remember when I read this story when I was a kid, it was like, it really gave me pause for thought, because by then I'd heard of other cases, the Travis Walton case and others, but you know, there was something about the Alien Legacy story that Geraldine Sutton Stith will share with us that was haunting for me. It was something that really stuck in my mind, and then when I got to know Geraldine, talked to her, felt the sincerity and the warmth coming from her, and then when I read her book, The Alien Legacy, I must tell you, folks, by all means, if you get a chance, get the book Alien Legacy, because Geraldine has a writing style that has a sense of immediacy to it. When you begin reading the story, it pulls you right in, and you become a participant in these events. So without any further ado, Geraldine, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Well, thank you, James, for having me once again.
Yeah, and a little backstory before we get started. This is the third time that I've had Geraldine on the show, and the previous two times we've been thwarted, and I can't help but think that it was some kind of alien interference that prevented those recordings to be edited, polished, and published. So finally, knock on wood, here we are. And Geraldine Stith Sutton, can you tell us, for the benefit of our listening audience, a bit about yourself and a bit about the family lore and how you became involved in uncovering this whole legacy?
Well, of course, it's the family story. It's the family secret. It was a secret for a long time. My parents didn't let us know about this. I just happened to find out about it by accident on, it was the summer of 68, and I was like 7 or 8 years old, and these people came to our door wanting to talk to my dad. And so my mom and dad were in the back of the house, and so I went and got them, and when they come up, front, you know, my dad, they all introduced themselves, you know, very cordial. And the man said, "We're here to talk about the Green Men." Well, of course, we didn't know what they were talking about, because this happened before we were born. My mom and dad were both married to their first spouses at the time. And my mom actually did live in Kelly with her first husband and 7 kids at the time. And my dad was married to his first wife. So when everything came together and they got together later on, this was never brought up. The older kids knew about it, but it was never talked about. This was like a secret, or, you know, they didn't talk about it because my dad was, you know, very adamant about this whole story, and it was scary, and it's something that the family went through that was terrifying. I know it's kind of hard to fathom the whole terror thing, but you've got to realize this was 1955. It was 11 people in the house that night. It was my grandmother, who was widowed at the time, and she had 3 young children, and then my dad and his current wife, Vera, and my uncle, JC, and his wife, Eileen. Eileen's brother, OP, was there, and there was Billy Ray Taylor and June Taylor, who were friends of my dad's, and they were all there the night this happened. And this was a farming family. You know, they couldn't afford to go out to the movies all the time and see things. And I have to realize, my dad and Billy Ray, they were in for the weekend. They both worked with a carnival. And so they were stationed close to home, and so they decided to come in and visit the family that weekend. And that Sunday night, this is when it all happened. And it's, you know, it's out there. It's scary. I know people think, yeah, right, whatever. But you got to realize my grandmother was 50 years old, and she was very, very religious. And my dad was the type of person that, you know, he was just believable. You know, he was just that type person. And the people around there believed what happened that night. And the fact that there were other things seen and heard by others that night that didn't come to play till later on was a big factor in, you know, the whole story also.
That was August 21st, 1955.
Yes.
And also, down through the ages, it's been referred to as the Kelly-Hopkinsville, Kentucky case. Is there a reason for the hyphenated name, Kelly-Hopkinsville?
Well, Kelly is like a little outskirt of Hopkinsville. It's all Christian County. It's all in the same county.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, Hopkinsville, I mean, Kelly was just like down the road from Hopkinsville, and if you needed anything, you went to Hopkinsville to get it. You know, that's, you know, like that night this happened, they went to Hopkinsville to get help. So, you know, that's just where the police station was. That's where everything was. Back then, Kelly was just a little spot in the road, which it's still a very small community, but back then it was even smaller. I mean, the houses were far apart. It was very sparse. Everybody out there was farmers or, you know, whatever, and, you know, different way of living back then. And but anyway, what happened was, like I said, Sunday evening they were all there because the next morning my dad and Billy Ray and they were going to leave out to go back to work. But that Sunday evening they got the fright of their life. Billy Ray went out to the well to get some water. They didn't have indoor plumbing. They did have electricity, but not indoor plumbing. So he went out there to get some water. It was hot, hot August. It had been very dry. They were even having meteor showers that month. And so, you know, what going on? He went out there, got the water, and as he was out there, he heard something, looked up toward the sky where he heard a sound, and he saw a silver, oval-shaped object going across the sky. And he described it having the colors of the rainbow streaming behind it. Okay, he didn't know what it was. It scared him. He ran in the house, told everybody that he had seen something, and Billy Ray got to realize he was kind of the jokester. So, of course, my dad and him thought that he went out there to play a trick on the girls, because you got to realize these were all young people. They were in their early 20s. I think Billy Ray's wife was either 18 or 19 at the time. So these were young people. So that's their first thought. So anyway, everybody laughed at him, you know, thought he was being silly. And finally, you know, he kept on with it. And so my dad finally said, you know, okay, take me out there. Show me where you saw this thing you saw. So they went back out to the well. Billy Ray pointed up to the sky, and he was telling my dad what he had seen. Well, there wasn't nothing there, and so he tried to put it off as being a shooting star or the meteor showers, you know, anything besides what he was saying it was. And Billy Ray was very adamant about the whole situation. He said he knew what all that stuff looked like, and he said that was none of those. And he said, besides that, your old dog tucked tail and ran under the house about the time this thing was going across the sky. And so, you know, my dad says, well, there's nothing here now, so let's just go back in, finish our card game, and enjoy the rest of the evening. And so they headed back to the house, and as they were heading back, lo and behold, out from the back of the house, coming out of the woods, was this little being about 3.5 foot tall, huge ears, huge glowing eyes, a large head, arms almost touching the ground, but its legs weren't moving. It appeared to be floating atop the ground. So, okay, this is a different thing here. So they both run in the house and start telling everybody there is something out there. Well, of course, my grandmother and my daddy's wife at the time and everything thought, all righty, Billy Ray got my dad out here. Now they're both trying to scare the girls. And my grandmother, you know, told him, you need to stop this because I've got to get these kids to bed. You know, you're scaring them. And so my dad said, there's something out there. I saw it with my own two eyes. And so my grandmother knew it was really getting serious when one got a rifle and one got a shotgun and one went to the back door and one went to the front door and stood there and waited. So my grandmother thought, oh, okay. So she went to the door where Billy Ray was and squatted down beside him on the floor and just asked him, said, Billy Ray, now, what did you see? And Billy Ray told him, Miss Glennie, I don't know what it was, but it looked like something from the deep, dark depths of Hades, you know. And he says, I just hope you never have to see this. It scared him that bad. So they continued to sit there, and it wasn't a few minutes later, lo and behold, around the corner of the house, there one was. So Billy Ray shoots. Everybody comes running to where they're at and asks, what's going on? And so my grandmother told him, said, I saw it. You're telling the truth. And about that time, a shot rings out in the front of the house, and they all go running to the front of the house, and there's my Uncle J.C., and he shoots at one through the window of the front of the house. And Billy Ray runs out to the front, and as he's standing there under the little roof there, this hand comes down to grab his hair. And as his hand is coming down, my Aunt Eileen grabs him and yanks him back in the house. And so then my dad runs out there and shoots it off the roof. And what they're doing is, as they're shooting them, they're just rolling and floating away. And they shoot one out of the big maple tree in the front yard. They shoot one on the back fence. You know, they're just shooting these little things. But they're not hurting them. And you got to realize, these are country boys. They can shoot a rabbit running. They can shoot a squirrel out of a tree. So they were hitting these things. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know what they were. Of course, the women were hysterical. The kids were hysterical. You know, what were they supposed to do? They were shooting these things, and they keep coming back. They didn't know what to do. My grandmother told my dad, you know, maybe they're not here to hurt us. You know, they look like they don't have anything on them. And they had little hands up in the air like they were surrendering or something. That was the thought pattern of my grandmother. And my daddy was like, we don't know what these things are. And to me, they're trying to get in the house. They keep coming to the windows and doors. So his thought was, protect the family. He didn't care. So anyway, they sat in the house, and it got quiet. And then all of a sudden, they heard one going across the metal roof. And you could hear the little talons, you know, scratching across the roof. So this really sent everybody into a tizzy. And my dad finally said, you know, we're going to sit here. We're going to wait till it gets quiet. Maybe they'll go away. And as soon as the coast is clear, we're going to hit the trucks and we're going to Hopkinsville. We're going to try to get help. Okay, here it is, the middle of the night. You've got 11 people. One is my grandmother, who's 50. You've got these three kids that are 12, 10, and 7. And then you got these others. And it's like, okay, so it got quiet. And my dad says, go. They run to the trucks, head to Hopkinsville, run in there to the sheriff's department. And there's this one little officer on duty. And he's like bombarded with his family. And they're all trying to talk and tell him what's going on. And he's trying to calm them down. And so finally he gets to what's going on. You know, you've got men attacking your house. And, you know, they're trying to make him understand these aren't human. These are something else. And so he calls Chief Russell Greenwell. And so Chief Greenwell says, keep them there. I'm on my way. He says, call Fort Campbell. Call Evansville. Call everybody you can. Get people out there. We're going to see what this is. Because he believed something was happening to this family. After all, you don't have a family of that size with that big of an age difference running in the middle of the night to the sheriff's department without a reason. And he knew this. And he gets there and he tries to talk to them. And he's like, okay, we're going to go out there. He said, just calm down. We're going to go out there. So here you got this little caravan of cars going out to Little Bitty Kelly in the middle of the night. And they all get out there. And you've got Army people from Fort Campbell, which is just down the road from Hopkinsville. You've got police officers. You've got the Kentucky New Era reporter and photographers. You've got everybody out there, and they're looking around this place and searching it. And no, my family will not go in the house until the house is searched. And so they go in the house, search everywhere. They can't find nothing, but it's been clear that something has happened because you've got holes through the screens, the woodwork's been shot up, you've got shotgun shells, rifle shells all over the place. So there was clear evidence something had happened, but there was no blood, there was no bodies, no feathers or fur, anything like that to tell that it was an animal they were shooting at. You know, no human bodies laying anywhere, so what are we supposed to do? And so they finally tell them, you know, well, there's nothing here. We can't do anything. And they leave. And so my grandmother and them get the kids settled down. Everybody gets settled down, laying down back in bed. And my grandmother's laying in bed, and my dad is sitting there in a rocket chair beside her with a rifle across his lap. She wakes up, and she looks toward the window, and she swears she sees one again. And she's thinking she's just dreaming, so she closes her eyes. And she does this two more times, and on the third time, she's like, no, I'm not dreaming. So she calls for my dad and says they're back. And so he gets up, and the battle starts again. And so they start shooting at these little things again until daylight. And they can't figure out why, when daylight hit, they left, but they did. They thought maybe it was the light, because they did notice that if a light was shown toward them, like if somebody turned a light on the house or something, they would back off. So I thought, well, maybe the light hurt their eyes because their eyes were so big. That's the only reasoning they could get behind that. So good thing, too, because they were out of ammunition. And they left. That was it. And then after that, it was the people invasion, because then people were coming from all over the place asking questions, wanting interviews. People were camping out in the yard because they wanted to see them come back. They thought if they come back, they would get to see them. So there's people actually camping in their yard. There was people walking through their house and picking up, like, souvenirs and taking stuff. And it was like the people invasion was worse than the alien invasion, but it happened. And 2 weeks later, my grandmother couldn't take it anymore. She sold the farm and moved into Hopkinsville to an apartment building with the three kids. And that was it. And if you got my dad to talk about it, you were lucky. He didn't like talking about it. So, you know, that year that those people came to the door, if that hadn't have happened, I don't know when I would have ever heard about it again. So, but anyway, I was, like I said, just like 7 or 8 years old. And so this terrified me. I would go around at night and close the windows, the doors, the shades, everything, because I was afraid these little beings are going to come back and they're going to be looking in at us. And the following weekend, after the couple came to talk to my dad took us to Kelly. I guess since it was out now, you know, he wanted to take us and show us where all this happened. And so we went to Kelly, and there, you know, the house was still standing. It wasn't livable, but it was still standing. And the well is still there to this day. And he took us to the back field, and lo and behold, in the back field was a round spot where, now this happened in 55, and this was about 68 that he took us out there. And there was still a round spot on the ground where nothing was growing. And I remember that to this day. So that's my family story.
Wow, that's fascinating and compelling. Now, in the aftermath, like you pointed out, was just as profound a story as the story itself. Now, apparently, if memory serves, when the people were checking out the grounds outside of the house, did they come across spots on the ground that seemed to be glowing, like little areas that seemed to be illuminated?
Where they had shot one off the back fence. Some of the police officers noticed as they were driving up that there was a glow on the ground. So of course that they headed to that first thing. And when they got back there, when you'd walk up on it, you couldn't see it. But when you'd walk away from it, you could. It was the weirdest thing. But yeah, there was something on the ground that was glowing back on the fence where they had shot at one.
Did it seem in the days and weeks afterwards that there was an army interest in the place? Like, was there any aerial surveillance, or was there any military people like probing the forest? Did anything like that happen?
Yes. The next morning, there were aircraft going over. I found out later, which I mentioned this in my second book because I found this out later, that the military was there the next morning combing the ground. They were like elbow to elbow combing the ground, yeah, to see what they could find. And if that don't tell you something, then
Well,
and in fact, they did find, somebody did find something, and they stuffed it, like covered it up real quick, ran it to a truck, put it in the back of the truck, and took off with it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And did these people come from Fort Campbell or from somewhere else, and no one really figured out where they came from?
I have no clue where they came from. I just took it for granted they came from Fort Campbell because, you know, Fort Campbell, like I said, it's just right down the road. And it was the closest place, but I don't know that because, you know, I've heard Wright-Patterson, you know, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base had some hand in that too.
Yeah, that wouldn't be surprising because they've been involved in so many other UFO cases over the years, especially when it came to crash saucers or crash craft and the bodies, you know. Now, after this experience, and it seemed like, and understandably, your grandma had had enough, basically, because not only was all these people coming around and turning it into like a big circus, but I guess the memories of that night's event were kind of shocking as well. And so she picked up the three kids, and she moved to the city. Now, in the time that she lived in the city there, or at least, you know, the nearby town, did she report anything else happening? Did she ever talk about any dreams or nightmares that came about as a result of this experience?
No, none of them will talk about this. I mean, she just didn't talk about it anymore. She moved because she was afraid they'd come back.
Mm.
And if they came back, what was she to do? Because there was nobody there. I mean, it was her, the three kids. Now, my Uncle J.C. and Aunt Eileen stayed there with her and helped with the farm. But, you know, they were in their 20s. I mean, like I said, these were young people here. You know, it wouldn't have been like my dad being there with JC to help. So she was afraid. She was afraid. And the family that took it over, some of those kids are still alive today, and they were afraid to move into that house.
Understandable.
I don't think they wanted to, but, you know, you got to go where your parents take you, so they had no choice.
You pointed out in the preface to your book that area of Kentucky had UFO sightings going back some time. In fact, if memory serves, the sheriff, was it Greenwell, he'd had his own kind of sighting some time before.
Yes, Chief Greenwell had a sighting like a couple of years before that. He was like coming home from his sister's house at Kentucky Lake, I believe it was, and he'd come up on this. These people were stopped in the road, and there was this object in the air, and it was just sitting there. And it just sat there for, I forgot how long it was. Of course, it's in the book, but I can't remember, like 45 minutes or something like that. And everybody just sat there and was watching this object in the sky until it finally took off. So, you know, that's one reason why he believed my grandmother and them so much, was because he had seen that. And like I said, later on, after the fact, you know, after my grandmother left the place and everything, other people finally came forward and said they'd heard things that night. They'd seen lights that night. So, you know, so that made it even more believable. Plus the fact that Bud Ledwith, he went and took the family members, he took them one at a time in a room by themselves and had them describe what they saw. And they were all the same. All the same. You know, and their stories never changed. It stayed the same all these years. So, you know, what are you supposed to believe? It's such a great story. I mean, I feel for them because they went through a lot back in 1955. You know, it affected their lives till the day they died. Now, you know, it's different. You know, I don't know what, my dad died in 95. And right before he died, he actually had people from Germany contacting him, wanting him to tell a story again. And they were actually going to pay for him to come to Germany because they were wanting to actually run tests and stuff to see if they could find if there was anything left, if there was, you know, anything there that they could go by. And he, you know, just flat out refused because he just didn't want to go through it again. He didn't want to bring it back up anymore. They went through a lot. And, you know, I feel for them because I know they did. And I don't know how he would feel today. I'm hoping he would be proud of the fact that we're bringing it back out and what the story is doing, especially for the Kelley community. They went through a lot. And even the three that are still alive today, they just don't talk about it.
Yeah, I've seen this in similar cases. Calvin Parker, who was, along with Charles Hickson, 1973, Pascagoula, Mississippi, Calvin Parker was silent about it for a long, long time, and finally, for a short period in the early 90s, if memory serves, or somewhere around the time frame, he broke the surface, talked about it, and then you never heard from him again. So, because it was a lot different back then. Nowadays, we have the internet, you know, someone has a strange UFO-type experience, they could go online and find a support group or, you know, join a forum, but there was such a ridicule factor, and there was such a lot of fear involved as well. It sounds like this is Kentucky. It was probably a very religious area, too, so there was that kind of dynamic. Now, over time, did you get a sense that, or did the family get a sense that the people of the Kelley-Hopkinsville area, that their feelings had changed about the incident? Because I can imagine at first there was the circus-like atmosphere, let's get out there, let's see if come back. And then later on, maybe they thought it brought ridicule or embarrassment upon the community. How has that feeling from the community progressed over the years?
Well, today it's better. I mean, but it didn't get that way till here lately. I mean, when we started this festival, which we have a festival every year now in Kelley, 7 years ago, it was not an easy task. People still didn't, I don't know what their problem is. I mean, to me, I would have embraced it and went with it because it's a part of history.
Yes.
But you have people that do not want to be involved in this, that do not want to hear about it, that do, you know, that does not want Kelley to be a part of it. And you still have people living there that does, well, especially the people that still live on the land, which I can understand their frame of mind because they have had a lot of trouble with people coming on their land over the years, wanting to see where it all happened at, wanting to see the whale, wanting to spot, all that stuff. And they've had a lot of trouble. I get it. But still, you know, it's a good thing now. I mean, and it did not get this way easily. I mean, now it's better. I mean, the seventh year, I mean, it's better now. But it didn't get this way easy, I'm telling you. All these years, people have been this way around here. I mean, now, if you go to another state or somewhere, you talk about this, it's like, oh, wow, you're kidding me. The Kelley story, the green man, it's like, wow, that's cool. But around here, it's like, oh, and they laugh. And I still get that. You know, I can go into Hopkinsville somewhere and go into a store or something and have on one of the festival T-shirts or anything alien-related, and they'll look at me like, really? And they'll say, do you believe in that stuff? I still get that. you know, even though right down the road in Kelly, you have got this fantastic story. You know, people are just like that around here. And you're right, a part of it's religion. This is a Bible Belt. And, I mean, you have people that do not believe in such a thing. You ain't going to get them to believe in such a thing. We're it, and that's it, and there ain't nothing else out there. That's how they believe. If you don't believe that, then just get out of my face and get out of my way. That's how they are. Hardcore.
You're in the seventh year of it now, so it seems to be making some progress. And also, please tell our listening audience the significance of this year, because it seems to coincide with an astronomical event.
Yes. The solar eclipse is going to be on the very day of the encounter, 62 years ago.
Wow.
So this year is really special. For the past, three, 4 years at the festival, I've had, you know, ever since we've known about this eclipse being on the day of, I've actually every year had people come to me and ask me, do you think they'll come back? Do you think they'll come back? People are actually afraid they're going to come back during the eclipse. So it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out, because we're supposed to have scientists and just all kinds of folks coming from all over the world to this thing. So we'll see how this is going to pan out.
And that's, again, that's August 21st, 2017,
yes.
This year. And is there going to be any live streaming of the event or any of the, I suppose there's going to be some like lectures or talks and that kind of thing?
Well, no, they're not going to have any lectures or talks. I'm going to speak off. We're having 4 days this year. We normally have two, but this year we're doing a four-day festival. And I'm going to talk every day, but other than that, it's just going to be bands and contests and stuff like that going on all during the festival. Of course, you've got everything going on around us. Hopkinsville is having their own festival thing going on. You got stuff going on down the road. Crofton, which is just a few miles down the road, is having their own. I mean, every little town around here is having their own thing that weekend. So it's going to be like, oh, my goodness, you know, where's everybody going to be going?
Yeah.
Because there's going to be so many choices.
There is a full-scale movie production in the works, and can you tell our audience what's going on there? Is it set for like a cinematic release in theaters? Will it be on Netflix? Will it be on Showtime? How are they going to present this?
Well, I don't think it's going to be that big. It's just a local production company that's doing it. They're hoping to really do great with it. I hope they do. They have worked so hard on this, and I think it's really going to turn out well. You know, we've had documentaries on top of documentaries done about this, but nothing like this. This is like a docudrama. It's more of a movie than it is a documentary. They're going into it deeper than any other documentary there has been made of it. It's going to be longer. I think it's really going to be good. It's going to be made by White Door Productions. We'll see what happens with it. I think they're wanting to enter into some contests and stuff, but it's not, you know, a big budget thing by any means. It's just a little local crew that got some actors together, and my younger brother is actually playing our dad. So, and they've done so well. These actors are really, really good. They've done so well with this. I hope it does well for them.
Well, I hope it does,
we'll
too.
See.
And like, for example, if you look at some of the movies on Netflix, it's the story and it's how it's put together that's important.
Right.
So you never know. It could latch on with Netflix or something like that. And I
that's
hope so.
That's true.
Yeah, I hope so, because it'll give it wider publicity. And it also
right.
go a long way towards healing, you know, the family and healing the community, too.
Well, I like the fact that people can see, you know, what they went through.
Yeah.
You know, that's my main objective about the whole thing, is I want people to realize what they went through. You know, it's a great story. Sure, little men came from somewhere and terrorized my family, but I want people to realize what they really, really went through. You know, I think people think it's just, like, funny and kick it to the side. You know, they think, oh, yeah, they had a little man come visit them. Oh, yeah, whatever. If I had something come visit me, I'd invite them on in, you know, and all this stuff. You wouldn't do that. People don't realize what they really would do if they were in that situation. And I want people to realize what they went through that night, you know.
That's important because, you know, I watch a show like Monsters and Mysteries in America, and a lot of these people, well, not a lot of them, but some of them say, well, I went out there just to, you know, see if this this thing really exists, right? Then they go out there, mm-hmm. then they have this horrifying experience, and then it's not just an experience anymore, it's a traumatic event, right? And
right.
And like what happened to your family, it kind of, in microcosm, you know, all compressed into one evening, and a number of family mm-hmm. members and friends, too, it kind of is like a metaphor for what people go through that have alien abduction experiences, right? Where they, you know, mm-hmm. there's an element of fear, of trauma. They don't want to, you know, be shamed or mocked and ridiculed by the community.
Right.
It's something that they have to kind of keep to themselves, right? Now, over time, has anyone contacted you and mentioned that they themselves or their families had gone through a similar experience, maybe not on the scale of your family, which was like a whole evening of this experience transpiring with shots being fired and whatnot. But have you heard stories from people that contacted you and told you anything similar?
I mean, I've had people, yeah, contact me about little things that have happened. I've actually got a story in my second book about this family that actually seen these little beings that looked like ours.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't do anything. They just appeared and they left, and that was about it. You know, and I've had a lot of people come forward and tell me, like, paranormal, ghosty things, but not anything other than seeing lights and stuff like that as far as alien things are concerned. I've never had anybody say they've seen an alien come up to the door or they've seen an alien walking out anywhere, anything like that. It's always lights or sounds or mostly lights, you know, but nothing like a body. Now, I do know of another story that happened in eastern Kentucky that I have in my second book that is similar to our little goblins, but they don't know where they've come from. There wasn't a spacecraft. There's just like these little beings that lived in a cave.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really interesting story.
And
the people that told the story to some friends of ours that contacted me about it because they were contacted about this story because they didn't know what to do because they lived in eastern Kentucky out in the middle of the woods somewhere, and at nighttime, these little beings were coming up to their house and stealing stuff.
Oh.
And they know this because they found this cave and found their stuff in the cave.
Oh, wow.
It was in the cave. It was outside the cave. You know, really creepy stuff. And, you know, at first they didn't believe it because their kids were saying that the little bald children were stealing their stuff. And so they just thought their kids were just like making up stories. But what was going on was at nighttime, the kids were seeing these things out in the yard at night and telling their parents, there's these little bald kids. That's what they called them because they didn't know what else to call them. These little bald kids were stealing their stuff.
Was it a similarly kind of remote location? Were these people?
Yeah.
Oh, wow,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, eastern Kentucky. I mean, and so the reason that I was contacted about it was because these little figures were so similar to ours that they wondered if there was any cave systems in Kelly because they were wondering if these little beings could be living in the cave systems. And there is cave systems in Kelly. Of course, Kentucky is full of cave systems. So, you know, is there some kind of connection with these little goblins? We don't know.
When I watch Monsters and Mysteries, it's like kind of a freak show when one considers all the different creatures out there, which isn't surprising. We're a planet spinning through, you know, through the solar system in a galaxy in a universe, and you know, we're not the only critters on this planet, right? There's so much of the Earth that's basically uncharted. It's just trackless forest and swamps and caverns, mm-hmm. and the world beneath our feet, all the cavern systems. Now, has there been any stories from the Native Americans in your area? Have they talked about any strange doings or any kind of odd beings that they've seen over the years?
Well, actually, there is a story from the Cherokee back many moons ago. You know, they had this little goblin-like creature, similar to our creature, that would terrorize them, that wouldn't let them on their land. And they would have to, like, fool with these little beings because they were, like, fooling with them, you know, not wanting them on land. And so, yeah, the Cherokee actually had this little being. I've got that story, too, in my second book. I've got all these little stories.
What's the title of your second book, Geraldine?
It's The Kelly Green Men.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
It'll be on the website, too, yeah. But, yeah, there's just all kinds of little stories out here. I mean, it's just a fascinating world we live in. It's not boring at all.
Not at all. Now, is there like Bigfoot sightings, Sasquatch sightings in your area as well?
I've had people tell me about those, too. I mean, and I've got a few little stories of those in there, too. It's just an eclectic little variety of things in this next book. But, yeah, I've actually had people talk to me about the Bigfoot situation around here, you know, hearing things. I've had one story where this couple had a storage building, and something actually moved the storage building off its foundation.
Wow.
And they believe that's what it was. You know, different little stories about Bigfoot, hearing things at night, hollering and stuff, you know. I got one story where somebody, this was in eastern Kentucky, where they went to their cabin up in the mountains for the weekend, and it was one of those weekends we had really, really deep, deep, deep snows. And they got in their cabin, and they settled down for the evening and was just sitting there in their bed reading, and they could hear something trashing through the forest. You could hear it breaking limbs. And then you could hear the scream of a deer, and it sounded like the deer was just being broken half.
Oh.
And it was that close. And so it was nighttime, and he wasn't about to get out and go look. I wouldn't have either. And so the next morning, he thought, well, I'll get out there the next morning, and I'll see if I can find anything. Of course, it snowed all night. Just deep, deep snow, and he said when he went out there that it was so deep he couldn't even get back to where the sounds were coming from, so he didn't fool with it. Yeah, stuff like that, you know. Creepy stuff.
Well, we live in the age of the cell phone camera and the digital camera, so it's not surprising that people come up with all kinds of videos of ETs, like, for example, and we've got a lot of photos over the years from Latin America and places like that, where there'd be some people mugging for the camera in the middle of the night, and they take a picture, and lo and behold, behind them is some little ET photobombing them, right? And then,
yeah,
and also, some of the videos I've seen of the Sasquatch and the Bigfoot are very compelling, because they're out there. There's probably a lot of them, and when we encroach upon their territory, a lot of the times these people don't even realize they've got Sasquatch on camera or on video. They're just panning the, you know, the forest, and they hear like a really loud crashing sound or something. Then they look over with the camera, and there's this big hairy, you know, creature there and stuff. And the
right.
skeptics want to have it both ways. They want to say, well, you know, that's a really blurry video. It doesn't really show us anything. But then on the other hand, if we come up with a really good video, they'll say, well, it's too good to be true. It's got to be a hoax. Right. So,
yes.
Yeah, so that doesn't wash with me, because we do live in the age of, you know, the digital camera and the cell phone camera. So people are going to find these things. They're going to, and as humanity spreads further and further into the bushland, we can expect to come across more and more of these creatures, like, you know, the Hopkinsville Kelly Goblin, if you will, the Sasquatch, and all the other creatures that I've been seeing on Monsters and Mysteries in America, which kind of gives me pause for thought, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. Now, has any people in your family, like the younger generation, have they, you know, grabbed the bull by the horn, so to speak? Have they become interested in this? I mean, they know they have a yearly festival and, you know, this movie is coming out, but has any of them manifested much of an interest in what had happened?
No, not really. I just think they're all afraid to. I'm the only one that is really getting out there and doing anything with it. I don't know if it's because they're afraid they'll be laughed at. And that's true, because I'll tell you what, my younger sister, she worked in a factory, two, 3 years ago. And they were making fun of her because of it.
Well, that's
so sad.
She was
getting a hard time because of it.
Yeah.
And that was just 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, no, I get it. I understand why nobody else wants to do anything with it, you know, and still here. You know, I can go to, like, a paranormal conference or a UFO conference, anything like that, and people absolutely, you know, understand and love it and ask questions and want to really get into it and everything. Then I can do, like, a little festival around here, or just, you know, an hour or two away somewhere or whatever, and it's totally different, totally different. You got people that, a good example is, a few years ago I did one, and these teenagers came up to our booth, and, I mean, these were like 15, 16, 17-year-olds, and seeing what we had and everything, and they're looking, and they're like, "You don't believe in God because you believe in aliens."
Wow.
Yeah. And these are teenagers.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff you get around here. And I'm like, "No, I believe in God just the same as you do, you know." And so you can believe in aliens and God too. Maybe he made them first. You know? But they don't like to hear that.
Yeah, because it conflicts with all the religious dogma. And it's interesting,
right?
Because when one goes through, and I'm not, like, well-versed in the Bible, Edgar Cayce apparently read it, like, 16 or 20 times in his life, you know, front to back. But when one just peruses through the Bible, one comes across all kinds of phenomena, all kinds of different different things that one would today make someone sit up and go, "Whoa!" I mean, that's some pretty heavy stuff. So it's funny how
the giants,
yeah.
Yes, all that whole thing. You know, you do not hear that in the church. They do not speak of them and the angels and all that stuff that went on, you know it? But it's there. It's written.
It is. And how, you know, the giants were around, and how the Nephilim saw the daughters
the Nephilim,
of man,
yes,
and deciding they were fair, took them as wives, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's all there in the Bible. But it's like very selective, isn't it, the way these pastors and the way these ministers teach it?
Yes, very selective.
Now, in the time of what we've got left in the first half, is there anything else you wanted to mention about the Kelly Hopkinsville case and your family legacy? Oh, and when can we expect your second book to come out?
Oh, it's been out.
Oh, okay.
It's already out.
Oh, okay. And the title of that again is?
The Kelly Green Men.
The Kelly Green Men, okay. And one thing about it, too, is they really were green, though, these particular beings.
Right. They were gray, gunmetal gray, silver. They weren't green. They got the name Green because a reporter, of course, there's a Kelly Green, and that's where he got it from.
Yes.
Kelly Green Men.
Yeah, the Kelly
Yeah.
green being a color, basically being like a
Right.
okay, yeah, because I remember back from the baseball days, the Oakland A's, their uniform was called the Kelly green and gold, right? I always wondered where the Kelly part came from, so now I know many years after the fact. The August 21st, 2017 is the festival that's coming up, happens to coincide with not only the anniversary of this event, but also this solar eclipse. Now, is it supposed to be a full eclipse of the sun? And I understand it only cuts through a certain swath of America instead of the whole country being like, cast in a darkness. It's only a certain part,
Right.
right?
Right, yes. It's going through the United States, and supposedly our area is going to be the best. It's going to be the longest duration, and it's going to be like dark as midnight in the middle of the day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people were wondering if the ETs will show up during the eclipse. Now, that's already happened. If you remember in Mexico City, when, again, that was at the very outset of this whole camcorder era, the total eclipse of the sun occurred in Mexico City, and thousands of people were out with their camcorders and video recorders. Lo and behold, when they played the video back, people were seeing like objects in the sky. And yes, and what it did was it triggered this basically a UFO wave in Mexico and Mexico City in particular that happened for years and years. After a while, in certain parts of Mexico, there would be whole fleets of UFOs craft in the sky in broad daylight, right? So, you never know if people ask for it. Be careful what you ask for, but
Oh my goodness, that would be so, oh gosh, creepy, scary.
well, it would be, but it would also give the skeptics who were just there to have a good time and hang out and take part in the spectacle, it give them something to think
Yeah.
about, right? Because
Oh, this is true, yeah.
yeah.
And we got even a couple of production crews coming in to do interviews and documentaries that week too.
That's fantastic.
So
When was the
going to be
movie like?
busy.
When's the like movie likely to be finished?
They're going to have it hopefully ready for the festival. It's going to be showed at the festival. I think they're
Oh.
going to try to do a look like a little premiere the week before, maybe at a local college or something. But it will be at the festival.
That's fantastic. Okay, well, we've reached the end of the first half of the Cosmic Switchboard Show. You've been listening to our very special guest, Geraldine Stith Sutton, the author of The Alien Legacy, about her family's 1955 experience, the Kelly Hopkinsville case, which is a classic in UFO alien annals, where 11 members, family friends as well as family members, were basically besieged in a household in rural Kentucky. We're just getting started, and we have so much more to go into, and we'll have Geraldine's website information and her contact information on our website and on our dedicated YouTube channel. And so we'll see you at the top of the next hour.